In the early 1970s, the Australian government introduced bilingual literacy programs for schools in the Northern Territory. The programs aimed to help Aboriginal students to learn oral English while learning the basics of literacy and numeracy in their own languages, a strategy known as two-way learning. The bilingual programs continued for several decades, though as national standardised testing was rolled out in the 1990s, they received less focus and less funding. As the bilingual programs were phased out, the text resources from the initiative were in danger of either degradation or outright loss. Since 2012, the search has been on to find, scan and upload the endangered literatures of Aboriginal languages in the Northern Territory. Cathy Bow is from Charles Darwin University. She manages the Living Archive of Aboriginal Languages and she's speaking to Away's Rico Adron.
We knew that, especially in schools that had bilingual education programs, they'd produced a whole lot of materials to help the kids to learn to read and write in their own language. And since many of the schools weren't doing bilingual education anymore, the books were sometimes being thrown out or being damaged and so on. The materials that were produced, there was sort of a peak in the 70s and 80s. And then even in the 90s when computers came in and the quality of the materials was improved, sometimes the quantity was reduced. Since then, we also got some further funding to include other communities that had printed stories, but they didn't have bilingual programs. So other places where they were writing and producing their own stories, not necessarily as part of a bilingual program, but to have their stories documented. And so we're including those stories in there as well.
Was it strictly text-based publications or have you been looking for audio recordings as well?
The funding we got was to focus on texts. There is a lot of audio out there. A lot of it's still on cassette tapes and even some on reel-to-reel. Yep. We don't have the resources, unfortunately, to digitise those things, although if there are already digital versions of stories that are in our text archive, we're happy to include them. It would be interesting to get further funding and be able to include those as well, because what we find is people look at the archive and see the stories and think they're great, but they'd love to be able to hear it. Mm. So there are people who can understand the language when it's spoken, but they can't necessarily read it. And we've got some stories in there with audio recordings, only what people have provided to us. We're not in a position to actually digitise or record much new material. So let's start with this one. Paru Manikuru Yurujurum Kurum Walan Javala Kapul Yun Nang Walala Wujin Bur Kikina Kayangara Walala Go Military Wijin Kamak Karmala Gururi Walala Military Marakari Punamiri Wangan Miri Baru Kanangura Najurum Ura Minjangai Bambatina Katurwara.
Is it possible to give us a current count of materials?
Yes, we've got close to 3,000 materials, separate items in the archive currently, and that's in nearly 50 different languages. Around half of them have English translations as well, so even if you don't read the language, you can still follow the stories. And there's a mix of teaching materials, so about language, you know, how to put sentences together and how to pronounce the sounds. There's lots of creation stories and traditional stories. There are sort of photo books of contemporary life, the kids going out collecting bush food and the old ladies explaining what the different things are. There are some translations from English and other languages. There's a real mix of scientific and educational materials in there. And it's interesting now because the Australian curriculum requires teachers to include Indigenous knowledge in the across all areas of the curriculum. And there's a whole lot of information within our archive that teachers can use. Even if they're not familiar with the languages, they can still find materials in English in there that explain different aspects of Indigenous culture that can be included in the Australian curriculum.
Cathy, when you do come across materials from 60s, 70s, 80s, how much luck did you have in finding the original contributors? Authors.
That was one of the concerns we had, that we didn't want to just take these books and put them online without consulting with the community.
Sure.
So even though we had permission from the Department of Education, who owned the copyright, we actually made an effort to go and find the people who were named in the books as contributors and make sure they were okay with what we were doing. And so in some places they were very good at listing the names of the people who contributed, and so we could find them or their families if someone had passed away. And generally, everyone's been really happy to see the books getting a new life on the digital archive. In some places, they didn't document who created the books. That's been a little bit harder to actually track down and work out who we can ask permission from. But we've got another around 1,500 items for which we don't yet have permission to put them online, either because we don't know who wrote them or we haven't found the people to ask permission from yet. And that's one of our challenges for this year, to think, well, should we just put it out there and get people to say, hey, that's my book, and take things down if people are not happy to have them up there, or get their permission to leave it up there. And what we found is the materials were mostly published for the community, though they didn't include a lot of secret or sacred knowledge in there.
Sure.
So there hasn't been anything really sensitive, and people, as I say, have been really happy to see it on there, and especially kids who might not be interested in reading books so much, but playing with something on a website and being able to interact with it on their phone has really brought a new life to these old stories.
You've covered a lot of areas and a lot of language groups. Though, which areas of the territory have you had trouble in either accessing or just getting materials from?
Well, because we started with the bilingual schools, which there are about between 15 and 20 across the territory, there's a big gap across the middle of the territory. So we've got lots from the desert, Central Australia area, and lots from the top end. But in the middle, there's not so much. We've got Creole, but south of that and north of the desert area, there isn't really very much. And we'd love to see some materials come from there. We've been given a few things. So we're working with Batchelor Institute, and they've got an archive themselves that we've been working with them to digitise. But we haven't yet been able to access the communities and the people there to get their permissions to make it public. So there, a map on our homepage shows in colour the languages that we have materials in, and across the middle there's a sort of a grey area where we don't really have much, and we'd love to get more from those places.
Who would you like to be interacting with the archive, and how would you like it to be utilised?
We've called it the Living Archive deliberately because we don't want it to just be a collection of things that are locked away somewhere that no one really looks at again. We want people to interact with them by either using them in the classroom or in the community, by finding these old stories that were told decades ago or even centuries ago in some cases, and seeing what they mean now and how they can be used in contemporary life. Also for schools all around the country and for teachers to be able to access some of that knowledge and think of creative ways to bring it into the school curriculum, and even to interact with it in terms of information technology, where you can get skills by downloading the PDF of the book and finding the text file. And then maybe we had a competition last year to invite people to bring the stories to life in some way. And so we had animations and videos and songs and all sorts of things. And that's the kind of creativity we'd love to see happening with some of these old stories and bringing them into the 21st century, because some of them are fairly basic handwritten text with a few little line drawings. And so updating them and making them more appealing and a bit more interactive is something that we'd love to see people doing more of.
Bala din narungi nanguni barunja, tuaturuna na dilchilina, pulna gai merkina tuaturuna, pingulu kapungulunja, pala urana, turumurana. Yata merki kalki kuruna no kalagauro, gaibalangununa ulturo. Pilimarakari, barunja mala, punamiri.
There's a repository, web application, digitisation program?
We're still digitising some stuff as it's sent to us. We think we've got most of the material that's available, but we're happy to receive more if people have uncovered things that we don't yet have. We've got the website is the main point of access, where you can access all the materials. There's a mobile app where you can download things to your phone or tablet, so you can use them when you're not connected to the internet. And we've got a social media site where we tell stories about some of the books and about how people are using them. And we'd love that to be an area people can engage with things and get into discussion about some of the books in there and how they can be used and tell stories about them coming to life again.
This year, though, 2016, funding for this particular initiative is drying up. What does that mean for the project?
Well, so the archive will stay open. We've got support from CDU Library, where it's hosted, and they will continue maintaining it for many years. We are still adding things to it as they become available. We've still got a bit of a backlog of things to get through. And we want to keep it going and respond to people's requests to either tweak it in some way to make it more user-friendly or to add information. And so the project will stay open on a bit of a shoestring budget for the rest of this year, but will continue to be accessible for many years to come.
Is it possible to give us an idea of the locations that you have covered and the number of languages?
I think we've got nearly 50 languages. There's a lot from the Yolngu area in northeast Arnhem Land, a lot from the desert, so Aranda, Pitjantjatjara, Mulberry, those languages. The top end, we've got Andilyakwa, Tiwi, Creole, we've got a lot in that language, Murrumpaat that I mentioned. Maningrida, there's lots of different languages from there. We've got hundreds of materials from there. Some of the smaller languages like Jawoyn. But if you have a look on our website, click on languages and a whole list of them come up and you can look through. So you can search, you can browse through lists either by language or by place, and also on the map you can click on a particular place or a particular language group and all the books will come up from there. We've tried to make it very visual so even people who might not have strong text literacy can still interact with it just by clicking on the images. But there's also the traditional search and browse functions that people are used to from library catalogues.
That's Cathy Bowe from Charles Darwin University, the project manager of the Living Archive of Aboriginal Languages. The two language pieces we heard were Marikaritjbaru, or Dangerous Crocodile, from Milingimpi, and Twerpa Twerpa Ampere Line, or Follow Round and Round, from the Tara Neutral Junction area, both in the Northern Territory. On our website, you'll find links to both of those resources, as well as the Living Archive of Aboriginal Languages.